Welcome to Season 6 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
This season is proudly sponsored by Allplay. If you've been following my social media, aka Token Gay Mer, you'll see that my Allplay gaming table gets used on the daily when I'm not flying to different conventions. Between hosting meals on it as a dining room table or removing the panels and adding the cup holders for a Friday night game night as a board gaming table, it gets used constantly. It's also perfect for being a working station for me building my ridiculous amount of prototypes. It honestly gets used more than I ever would have expected. Not to mention, it's great for hiding games and their pieces from my cats. Sans is my little box sitter, while Nova tries to steal the dice as Banshee watches from high atop the cat tower. I've caught them attempting to take dice from Allplay's Sequoia and Mountain Goats, two of my favorite Allplay games that my non-gamer friends adore. We play a lot of party games, and these two, they don't mind me taking out instead. So check out Allplay's tables, bags, playmats, and board games at allplay.com. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 128, Twinkle Twinkle. Today we are joined by publisher, art director, freelance game designer, oh my god, so many different things you do, Ammon Anderson. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to talk with you in a official capacity.
As opposed to all the unofficial conversations we have normally.
Well, we're friends, and so we like talk about stuff.
That's true, but typically we don't record it for people to listen to, so we'll see how well this goes.
Well, we could potentially, like, make people really happy or get ourselves canceled. I don't know.
I have an editor for that. We'll avoid it. This will be great. But for anyone who doesn't know you, why don't you say a little bit about, like, what you do? I mean, I listed a bunch of things, but also, like, how did you get into designing games?
I left corporate America after 20 years. And it was the best choice ever made. Personally and financially, it was the worst choice ever made.
Yeah, that seems right.
It's literally like they just pay you and they pay you good to do non-inspiring stuff. And I work for an insurance company. So I decided I was going to like go into like fine art. And then I opened up a little fine art store in my local mall because they gave me a great deal on some space. And COVID hit and I was stuck with paying all the bills for a location that was closed down and people couldn't even visit. So I just watched like my savings just dwindle and dwindle and dwindle and dwindle. And then finally, like even after they opened it all back up, there was just no coming back. People didn't really show up to buy art anymore. Everything shifted to entertainment. And so I was sitting there thinking about like this awful situation. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to make a game. I played a lot of games with my kids. And so I made a little game called Taco and I sat there and I illustrated it and I made the game in about a month, like in about 28 days, I took it from like game concept to functional system to completely illustrated game. And I kickstarted it and it did awful because I didn't know what I was doing. But it funded on accident the last day.
Oh, jeez. Oh, I'm surprised you kept it open.
Well, I was going to cancel it the last day. Then a bunch of people were like, we got to get this over the hump. And they literally like threw a bunch of money at it the last day. And I was like, okay. They were all congratulating everybody that it got funded. And I was like, okay, I can't cancel this now. So
you're like, now I have responsibility.
Oh my gosh, it was bad. And then during that period of time when they're like COVID's like ruining everything, right? Like shipping prices doubled to America. And so freight prices doubled and then shipping prices like went up by like 40% in North America and everywhere else around the world. And so I realized once I got my product that like I had a real conundrum. I was about $9,000 short of fulfilling my game. So I put it on my credit card because I wasn't going to not deliver. And I've been chasing this dream ever since.
What a story. Sadly, super relatable to so many stories I've heard. It got you here, so that's good.
Well, I kind of tell people now, they're like, dude, how do you do this? And I say, go fail a project real bad. And if you still like it when you're done, like then you're in the right industry. Go make something and then no matter what, deliver. And you're going to learn everything you need to know about designing a product, manufacturing a product, importing a product, and then distributing a product. And when I say you'll know everything, I mean you'll know like 2% of what you need to know. You'll understand the scope of what you don't know at that point.
Honestly, I always think that's a good thing to know is like you don't know what you don't know, but also being smart enough to figure out who can help fill those gaps or how to learn those things is important. And diving in there head first, not always fun, but you did get stuff done, and you learned a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I still have a lot of taco in my basement, so if anybody wants a copy. Ultimately, what we're really talking about, right, is becoming an entrepreneur on some level. Even if you don't, like, make it, you know, manufacture it yourself, and you're just deciding to become an entrepreneur designer and selling it to a publisher, which I have also done with Gnome Hollow. I did it with Twinkle Twinkle, which is what we're here to talk about today. I've done it with a game called Space Potato that's with a small publisher that's coming out at the end of this year. Ultimately, like, regardless of which path you take in this industry, you're essentially an entrepreneur. You know that as well as I do. It's just a ton of work, but it's also the best industry and the best people in the world.
Except when you find those not so good ones. But yes, in general, I would say most people are working to help each other out and lift each other up, which is freaking great. Because bringing in more gamers to buy the games is better than trying to shoot down the competition.
Well, and I think, like, the fun thing is that even, like, when you do create a game, because ultimately every game we make is a competitor with someone else's game. But it's like, you design games and I design games, but I don't feel like I'm your competitor. I'm, like, rooting for you to be successful. And hopefully that's coming in the other direction. And so we just all sort of, like, support one another, which is, like, really cool.
It is super cool and very different from so many other industries. But here, let's circle back. This episode, we're specifically talking about Twinkle Twinkle. So I want to go into, where did the initial inspiration come for this game in particular?
I wanted to make a space game. I love space. Every single night, if you came into my bedroom, you would find me watching YouTube, like, right before I go to sleep, and I'm always watching, like, the latest images from the JSW. And I am so, like, blown away by, like, all of the things that they're finding and the new research and the new images of the universe and stuff. I just think it's absolutely incredible. So in the midst of the fiasco around the super hype that happened prior to me signing Gnome Hollow, I was going to conventions with a friend of mine named Brant Brinkerhoff, and I was in the car, and he's like, dude, you gotta make another game. And I was like, yeah, I've been thinking about it. Like, I want to make this game about space. And so we had this conversation, and I told him kind of, like, what I was hoping to build, and then we sort of brainstormed in the car ride. And by the time we got to RageCon, I got to my hotel room, and I, like, jotted down all these notes. And then I came back that next week, and I knew I wanted acrylic tiles because I wanted the white to stand against the dark backgrounds. My very first prototype, I built all the tiles types that I knew I wanted to have. I knew I wanted it to be kind of modular so I could add in tiles or remove tiles. And then each tile scored differently, right? So I really, really am starting to have sort of, like, a little love affair with rolling rights or flipping rights. But a lot of people complain about them. They complain because, like, a lot of people don't feel very artistic and they don't like drawing, like, little shapes in boxes. So I thought, what if I built a game based on the sort of the concepts of a roll and write or a flip and write? But instead of people having to draw all the shapes in the little boxes, I just built a system where I could create all sorts of these different tiles, and those were essentially what you would draw. And so Twinkle Twinkle came out of that sort of, like, love of space and wanting to create a flip and write or roll and write.
Oh, that's super cool. And so then, for people who haven't played the game, mind going over the rules?
Yeah, so there's a centralized drafting system. So every player has a little scoreboard and a little, like, player board. And that player board has 20 spaces on it that you're going to fill with tiles. All the tiles are clear acrylic. And then they have, like, little white stars on them or little white planets on them or little white stuff. And you can see through the parts that doesn't have white when you place them down. You're going to get points for multiple different things. You're going to get points for the number of constellations that you create with stars, but you're also going to get points for the number of stars in constellations. So you're kind of balancing those two things that are a little bit, like, opposed to one another. And then you're going to get points for planets, and you're going to get points for black holes, but black holes eat planets and destroy your stars and your constellations. So you're placing your things in different locations, trying to, like, create the most successful version of the board. But the game comes from sort of a drafting system. So you're always seeing the tiles from your first draft for the current round, and you're seeing the four new tiles coming up next round. The tile that you take, like, if you're the first player to choose, the tile you take is going to determine your position in the next round for which tile you're going to take next. That's how the basic gameplay works. So you may sacrifice and take a tile that you don't really like or doesn't support your strategy, but it's because you really need to go first in the next round to get a tile that's worth a lot of points. It's a fun, quick little drafting game. It takes about 30 minutes, and it's absolutely beautiful. When you've clicked in your last little tile, you see, like, your cool little grid, and it's full of this beautiful little line art.
Yeah, and with it being signed by Allplay, I know it also came with, like, an optional app where when you show it or, like, you scan it or whatever, it'll show the score for you. I thought that was really cool, like, a nice touch.
Yeah, that's actually still in development. The standard game comes with 5 tile sets. So it comes with black holes, it comes with planets, satellites, asteroids, and comets. So those are the core systems. Each of those tiles has 2 different scoring systems for each one. And so you can flip the little like rule tot chip over and like play the blue side or the green side. The blue side's harder than the green side. And it adds a lot of more player interaction if you play the blue side. I think it's more fun, but the green side is the entry level. But we also released 6 additional tile sets like straight out of the gate with the release of the game. So the How I Wonder expansion adds moons, rockets, galaxies, wormholes, and nebulas. All of those function completely differently. So in any given game, you're going to play with 5 tile sets plus stars. Oh, there's another one too called Extraterrestrials. And that adds little tiny alien meeples. Yeah. It was always meant to be a modular system. Because there's so many variables and how they interact with other systems, it's been, I guess, kind of a nightmare to program this little score thing. So it's coming soon. It's not finished. It's not fully functional yet, but
it's just been highly marketed, so I'm excited for it.
Yeah. It's going to be super cool. So the game is a little bit mathy in the way that you score. The funny thing is that when we released it at Gen Con, I was like, hey, let me walk you through the score. Like, no, I got this. This is fun. I love this. This is so thinky and interesting, and I want to see how my system works. And one person said I would probably like use the scoring app once, and then after that I would totally like go back to scoring it manually because I think this is fun. But I think people who are more like into less hobby games, they're going to want to use that scoring app. It'll be very popular.
It's always interesting when you have a game that is light in the rules but interesting in the strategy, but the longest thing to do is really just counting up your points, and sometimes it's nice to have something that's kind of your little cheat. So I'm sure that's why they decided we're going to try to work on this app, even though it's their own fault for adding additional expansions and making it harder on themselves.
Right. So once you know how the whole system works, you can score your board in about 3 minutes. Like, it's not super long. Most people want to like play a game, and what this will allow them to do is play the game, take a picture, play the next game, take a picture, play the next game, and then you can play it really quickly and just move right into new systems, which is fun.
That's awesome. And what changes happened while playtesting and developing the game?
I had wanted the game to be like, you could play it with a group of like 30 people. So you could buy multiple copies of the game and everyone could play it all at the same time. So I had designed it to be like simultaneous play. So the core of the drafting system at the time was basically like, on your turn, you're going to pull 4 tiles and you're going to take one and pass. And so you're always taking the tile that you want most, which was really fun. And it played super fast. You could play a round of this game with any number of people in about 15 minutes. When Allplay picked it up, they brought in John Brieger, and he's fantastic to work with. He is like crazy smart, just the nicest guy ever, and all he does is dev games now. And he does make some games of his own. And he was like, I think we can make this crunchier. And I was like, yeah, like if you want to make it crunchier, that's fine. It just won't. Like, we tried to get it up to 6 players and keep like that super crunch level of the game that as it is today. But it broke down with the new drafting system. So ultimately, like, people could still play it with the old drafting system. We ended up going with this newer drafting system, which ironically you would think would break down at 2 players, but it's even crunchier at 2 players than it is at 4 players. Pretty interesting.
And how did you end up connecting with Allplay for this game?
I submitted Twinkle Twinkle, and that was its name, to the PAX Rising Showcase. I submitted 2 games that year, and they selected Twinkle Twinkle. I actually thought they were going to select the other game, which was a really cool dice gambling polyomino placement game called Eat the Feet. And it was about everybody was playing as a swarm of piranha, and you were all fighting over the toes in the water, and when you got the toes, like, you would flip over the polyomino, and then on the back was just their bones.
Oh, jeez. That's so funny. Like, it's so messed up, but kind of funny. That feels very you.
And it's super cute. It's super me, right? Like, I have this sort of morbid sense of humor, and I thought for sure they were going to pick it, but they were like, no, this is really interesting, the Twinkle Twinkle. So, played it with people. Kickstarter had, like, purchased this big section inside the hall at PAX Unplugged, and they do it every year. And then they support 5 or 6 new creators, like, who that have never been selected at PAX Unplugged, and they get a table, and then you can play your game with all the people in the main show hall all week long, all weekend, which is amazing. And so I went out there and I took the game and didn't realize like how difficult it is to sit there and man a table by yourself, like with no bathroom breaks for 8 hours straight and no food, no way to fill up your water. I got really lucky. Like the second day, a friend of mine came by and he goes, "Hey, have you like eaten anything or gone to the bathroom?" I was like, "No." He's like, "How about I start teaching this for a minute and you just go take a break?" I was like, "I love you. You're amazing." So we played it the whole weekend and people would sit at the table and they loved it. People were very attracted to the look of the game, and several fantastic friends in the industry sat down and played it and said, "We love this." And one of those friends, Jay, went over to Joe at AllPlay and just said, "Dude, that's an AllPlay game. You need to check out this game. Like, this game is 100% for AllPlay." And I got a phone call from him after the show and just said, "Hey, like, I'd love to check out this game. Can you ship me a copy?" And I was like, "Sure, I'll ship you a copy." I had three prototypes. I threw one in the mail and I shipped it to Joe, and like 3 days later it arrived. And like at 11 p.m. that night, my time, so it was like 1 a.m. his time, my cell phone rings and it's Joe from AllPlay. And he's like, "Hey, we've been playing this all night. We've played like 15 rounds of this. Love this game. Like, you're not signing this to anybody, are you? Have you got any offers?" And I was like, "Dude, wow. You've had this for like 6 hours."
That is a very Joe moment. Yeah, he does that.
It was such a Joe moment, and I didn't know that at the time.
Pretty much as MO, you'll know very quickly if you are going to get an AllPlay game signed, which I respect it. Honestly, though, I prefer, so I like have learned now that if there's a gut feeling in that first or second play, it typically is probably going to get signed. You can start to feel it now.
100%. Yeah. It's so great. Like, he works so fast. He called me the next morning. He's like, "Look," he's like, "I'm going to call you tomorrow morning and I'm going to have an offer for you." He's like, "What are you hoping for?" And I told him what I was hoping for. And the next morning he called me and he's like, "Great, this is your offer." And I was like, "Whoa, that's crazy. That was super fast." We signed that offer like, I think 2 days later, and it became an AllPlay game. So he works really, really, really quickly, which I actually liked a lot. And working with the AllPlay team's been fantastic. They've been just 100% amazing to work with.
That's awesome to hear, yeah. And it's also probably really exciting for you to get that. Like, had you already started pitching it around, or had it only been at that showcase at that point?
It only been at the showcase at that point. Like,
okay. So he kind of jumped the line. You didn't have to do any pitching then.
Yeah, no, he jumped the line. And that's by great. The time when people found out he was interested in the game, I started getting requests from other publishers who wanted to look at it. And so I had started sending him out.
Just so dumb how that like happens. I'm like, "What are you doing, publishers?" Because sometimes you want to just go with like, if this one person is super enthusiastic and giving you what you want, it's like, is it even worth shopping around, or do you just sign with the one?
Yeah. Well, I've been really lucky. Gnome Hollow got so much buzz that like whenever I have a new game, they sell really, really quickly. I mean, I'm in the process of selling a game with Arcane Wonders right now. And they were based, like, I really love Robert. He's misunderstood, I think. And he cracks me up because he kind of reminds me of my dad. And he'll hate that I said that. And I love that he'll hate that I said that.
That's so funny. I like Robert a lot. I also love his cane. His cane reminds me of Barnabas Collins from Dark Shadows. With a little wolf head on it. It's so true.
It's so true. Anyway, he saw this game at Origins and he's just like, "Okay, tell me that you won't show this to anybody else until Gen Con. Promise me." Like, I'm like, "Robert, why would I do that? Like, why would I like not show a game to someone else?" He's like, "Just give me the time. Don't do this." Cause he's like, "Your game sells so fast and I can't even like get an offer to you." Cause every company works differently, right?
Oh God, some are so slow.
And some of them are slow. And Arcane Wonders is really like a slower to like the thing, I think. But phenomenal people. I just love them. But Joe just is, he's fast. He's just like, "Yep, I want it. Let's do this."
I think that's probably how he's beaten out some other people, because he can make those decisions quickly versus some where it feels like trying to turn a whole cruise ship around versus a speedboat. It's just like, it takes like a day, week, month.
You're not wrong. I think that Joe has found a lot of fantastic games to add to his collection that sell really well. And he's been able to do it quickly. And frankly, like, AllPlay just moves so many more copies of games than the average publisher.
Yeah, what he's doing is working for him. And it's great. It sounds like you are happy with where Twinkle Twinkle's at this point. I know it's still pretty fresh in people's hands.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think it's like Miniature Market still hasn't released it to the public yet. So I think the only way you can actually get a copy right now,
keep in mind, by the time this airs, people will be able to get it and it'll be out for Christmas and all that good stuff.
Yeah, it'll be available. If you're listening to this, you should, if you can't get it, then call me. We'll figure out how to get this moving.
That means you're on the next print run.
Well, they moved through the first container like immediately. Like they just, it was gone. It was sold. And then it went to a lot of people. They didn't even have enough to, like, get it every... Like, they distributed the Kickstarter backers, and then the people that were, like, the stores that wanted to pick it up. And they've been waiting for another container to come in just so that they can finish sending it out to local, like, retailers.
That's amazing. Way to go.
I know. Like, a whole container is crazy. Like, that's so fun to see it. Like, a whole container just go into the world.
Mm-hmm. No, it's awesome. And I also was a big space nerd when I was little. I just actually read a book called Atmosphere, since I've been reading a lot more recently. And it was cool because it was talking about early days of NASA when women were allowed to actually, like, be astronauts. But also there's a sapphic queer theme to it, so I like that part too.
Yeah. Have you seen the TV show on Apple called For All Mankind? And it's an alternate future. It's an alternate reality from, like, what actually happened. So imagine if, like, America didn't get to the moon first and, like, Russia did. If you love space at all, like, this show is going to blow your mind. It's 100% worth, like, the $10 a month and just binge this thing to watch it on Apple TV for a month and then cancel it.
That is what I did with Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso is, like, so good.
Yeah, when I get back to being able to watch TV, I will get on Apple television. If it sounds like a winter, like a December, January vibe, I'll just, like, binge watch all the shows.
My family, we watched all four seasons, and it was like, my wife said, I think that's, like, the best TV show ever made. And I was like, yeah, it's so good. It's what we should be doing as a country, like, going out and going into space and going to the moon and doing, like, this cool science out in space.
Cool.
I love that you're a space nerd, too. Oh, my gosh. I love that.
Yeah. My dad used to, like, take me out and look at stars, and I had, like, some of those star maps. And in college, I was a little dweeb, and I got those glow-in-the-dark stars. And at the time, I had an interesting relationship with my roommate, but she was having a hard time. So I, like, built the constellations above our beds and, like, a little note saying, like, I don't know, like, I love you or something. Like some dweeby little thing. But yeah, I used to be much more into stars when I was younger. I think board games just ate a ton of hobbies.
Oh, that's true. But kindness is never dweeby. It's always cool, no matter what. So I used to get a lot of accolades at my work. That is a great way to, like, find out that people like your work. But when you start working for yourself, like, nobody, like, does that. They don't, like, pat you on the back and be like, great job on this project. And so when I started making games, I started, like, rewarding myself whenever I sell the game. Now, like, whenever I make a game, I buy myself the thing that is my reward for when I sell it or publish it, but I don't get to, like, open that thing up until I sell the game. For Twinkle Twinkle, I actually bought, like, the Lego set for the original rocket, like the Apollo, and I kept it, and my kids are like, can we put this together? I was like, no, I haven't sold this game yet. It's in my office, and I have it sitting up here, and I just love it, so... I'm just a total space nerd, and I just needed a reason to buy that Lego set.
That is so cool. I like doing little celebrations, too. For me, it's more like, oh, I signed this game. This advance, like, half of it goes into savings and half goes to fund money, and it's normally geared towards a trip. And I recently had quite a few signs, so when this airs, I will be in Europe while it's going on. Or, no, I just got back.
Yeah, hoorah. Like, time in Europe is fun.
Yeah, that's, like, my reward. It's great, but that's awesome that you do that.
You've published so many games. Like, you have, like, I mean, I think, like, you've got four times as many games as I do. You inspire me.
Oh, thank you. All right, moving back to your stuff, but how long do you think it took when you started working on Twinkle Twinkle on that car ride all the way until being able to open up your Lego set because people have the game and are playing it?
So let's see here. Let's see. When is RageCon? I can actually tell you when this is. Let's see. RageCon. Yes, the end of June. So I started talking about it. I came home after RageCon, so that would have been early July of 2023. And then I signed the game on January 5th. 2024. So is almost exactly 6 months from, like, idea to concept to prototype and then play testing and then taking it to PAX Unplugged in November and then signing it in January.
Okay. And then with the Kickstarter and it coming out?
The Kickstarter ran a year later in January and then it delivered in July. So almost 2 years.
Yeah. It's a pretty solid timeline.
Yeah. Like 2 years from start, from, like, literally from, like, sitting there, like, writing down on my laptop, like, what I wanted it to be, having it delivered was almost exactly 2 years. Because the first copies actually delivered the very first week of July. So, yeah, 24 months.
That's amazing. And I know with, like, Gnome Hollow, you got to do the art did you want to do the art for Twinkle Twinkle, or was it something where you're like, no, I'd rather just stick with design, someone else does it? How did that go?
So the art that they end up with is very, very, very close to what I had done. It's a little bit stylized a little bit differently than the way that I had done it. I just told Joe, like, it was 100% up to him. I didn't have a total preference on it. Like, illustrating games is a ton of work. Like, a ton of work. Like, Gnome Hollow, the artwork in that game probably took me, like, the best part of six months to do all of it. But I did it over time, and I did it in the evenings, and I did it because I wasn't working full-time because of a TBI. So I could sort of, like, pour all that extra time in. And it was actually, like, hand-painted watercolor. I actually did some very, very cool alcohol inks that look like space for the backgrounds of my original prototype, and I loved them. I was super hoping that Allplay would use them, but he had been wanting to work with Natalie Dunboy out of France. She's an illustrator that did Dixit, the Disney version, and he'd been wanting to work with her for a long time, and so he'd pitched her several projects, apparently, and she'd sort of said, yeah, it's not my thing. And when he pitched her this game, she goes, oh my gosh, I want to do that. So she ended up doing the artwork for this game, and I just told Joe, I was like, yeah, dude, if you want to go that route, I'm totally fine with it. And I think she did a great job on the artwork. I'm pretty open to having a publisher use another illustrator on my work, mostly because, like, illustration work, we have, like, a real challenge in America. Like, people in other countries are willing to work substantially cheaper than an American can work and make enough money to survive. So, like, if you hire, like, an illustrator, like, in Spain or in places in Asia, like, you're going to pay them a fraction of what you would pay an American illustrator. Or even, like, an illustrator in sort of the more wealthy countries in Europe, they're also going to charge pretty good money. I mean, for example, like, in America, like, a good cover for a game is going to cost you anywhere between $3,000 and $10,000 for a cover. Especially if this person's like a well-known name, you're gonna pay the top tier dollars for it. You can hire someone in Asia or like certain places in Europe to do a cover for you for like $800. It's difficult to find people that want to work with you at the prices that you can actually pay your bills for. On the flip side, I really like illustrating my stuff. So like, I have a game coming out this year called Space Potato. It's gonna be a Kickstarter with MV Born Games. And that game is actually inspired by Twinkle Twinkle. But I illustrated all that, and I took the original like alcohol inks that I had made for Twinkle Twinkle, and that's the background for all of my artwork in Space Potato, which is super fun. It was inspired by that game because Evan and Matt and I sat down to play the game at Gen Con in a live broadcast, literally this summer, like 2 months after I had like had the idea. And my little asteroids look like little potatoes. And so Evan goes, huh, I'll take that space potato. And he would put it in his thing and he called it Space Potato. And then Matt turns to me and said, would you make me a game called Space Potato? And I said, I will make you a game called Space Potato. And so Space Potato was born.
Amazing. Feels very appropriate.
Many of my games just come from like moments. You hear something and you're like, oh my gosh, there's a game there. I made a game called Got Your Goat. And it's just based off of that. I said to my son one day, like, I teased him, and he goes, hey, I was like, got your goat. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, it's an old phrase from, like, the 80s and 90s that nobody uses anymore. But I think it's hysterical. And so I made a game, like, a party game called Got Your Goat.
Okay, what does that even mean? I have not actually heard that either. Like, it's like, got your nose, but it's a goat?
No. The idiom, got your goat, means to annoy, anger, or irritate someone. So, like, whenever you sort of get them to respond, like, when you're, like, sort of goading them a little bit, and then they,
okay.
They, like, let you know that you've gotten them bugged, and they're like, really? And you're like, got your goat. And then you say that, and it's hysterical.
Now I'm educated. I appreciate this.
It's hysterical because, like, so I literally made these, like, a super, super, super cute illustrations of goats. And the whole game is literally based off of this idea that, like, I have a herd of goats. And the entire gameplay is people are trying to take my goats. And you're like, got your goat, give it to me. And then somebody wins or loses based on the number of goats they have or don't have. It's very, very mess. And that one is gone.
All right, well, rewinding past Space Potato, back to Twinkle Twinkle. Did you have, like, a favorite part and a least favorite part of that design experience?
Do you know the Jennies from Last Night Games? So there's a little company called Last Night Games. They've made a game called Chameleon and Panda Royale, which got picked up by Devir in South America and Spain. They're a fantastic little company, and they are my friends. And they live here. near me. They live like 15 minutes from me. So he's got a huge laser cutter. And I was like, hey, can I pay you to cut out these like acrylic things? And he's like, yeah, dude, come down here. So I literally illustrated him and we went down there and we had this like fantastic moment where we started like building a game together while we're waiting for the laser to cut out all these pieces. This whole day like really stands out to me. I come home from like a convention or I get an idea in my head and then I just like disappear into my computer and my family is like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm actually making these clear crystals with little tiny things on them and then we're going to stick them on boards. And they're like, dad, you're weird. So I got home and I had like bags of these like clear acrylic tiles that are like about an inch by an inch. And they've already had the designs etched into them and they've got tape on both sides. And so my daughter's like, dad, that smells weird. And I said, I will pay you $25 if you will just paint the insides of all these little like designs with white paint and then peel the tape off with me. And we can turn on your favorite show and we'll just sit here and we're going to paint these together. And my daughter sat there for hours with me and we painted in all the little designs with white paint. And then we would peel very carefully off the tape and we'd let them all dry on this big table. And I think that was my favorite moment of the whole game is just sitting there. And my daughter was, at the time, I think she was like 10 years old. And she said, dad, this is actually kind of cool. I want to make games like you someday.
Aww.
I don't know. Like, I think that was my favorite part is working with him and laser cutting them and then bringing them home and painting them.
That's so cute. It is a good memory. Child labor. No, I'm just kidding.
For people who are listening, legally, if you own a business, you can legally use your children at any age as much as you want, and you can pay them $5,000 a year tax-free. Talk to an accountant.
That's amazing. Yeah, nope. My first job was my dad paying me under the table for a yogurt shop until I was an age that made sense to pay me not under the table.
That's awesome. We have a lot of fun, and anybody who knows me knows that like I make ridiculous prototypes of games like out of the gate.
It's ridiculous. I'm jealous. I want all your toys.
I make all sorts of weird stuff and I love it, and prototyping is probably my favorite part of a game. I make handmade boxes for my games. I print and cut all my own cards and they feel just like regular poker cards. I found some really cool paper stocks. In fact, the game that is going to Arcane Wonders, Robert got a copy in the mail and he called me. He goes, where did you make your cards? These, I love these. And I said, oh, I'm in my basement. So I just love trying to make a game look really, really, really good.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's nice because it kind of, like, it's unfair in some ways that, it, like, having a nice prototype really does set you apart from other designers. But it's also, on the publisher side, they don't have to think as hard to imagine it as a final product because, like, you've already basically done most of the work for them. Whether or not they take your art, they'll at least take your art direction.
Exactly. For me, what it is that I am communicating the vision for this game to the best degree that I can possibly communicate it. You don't have to be an illustrator to do that. Like, you can use AI art. I know some publishers get all bent if you, like, give me AI art, whatever.
Yeah, I personally don't care. It's like, it levels the playing field. Like, I think graphic design is more important, personally, because you need things to function more than look pretty as a prototype.
I 100% agree with you. Building, like, a really good UI, and then having super clear rules. I've read the rules for a lot of prototypes, and I'd say, like, the rules probably turn off publishers more than anything, because they're reading these rules, trying to understand this game, and they're like, this is so confusing. I tell a lot of people, because somebody played Gnome Hollow wrong, and they didn't like it. And I said, what didn't you like about it? And I said, and I love it when people tell me what they don't like about my stuff. Like, I'm never offended. My favorite reviews on BGG are the ones where it's like, hello, this game's garbage and it's not worth the paper it's printed on. And I just giggle. I'm like, okay, make a better game. At the end of the day, like, when you're expressing this idea of a game and you're creating the rules, I tell people this: if you've played my game wrong, you've not played my game. Because even if you change a couple rules, like, you have not experienced what the experience that I engineered. You experienced something different. If you give a publisher a game, no matter how good it looks, they can't figure out how to play it from the rules that you give them. That's probably the single biggest determining factor of why they're not going to pick it up, in my mind.
On the publisher side, because I am the one who typically is doing the inventor relations for my company, and it's like, I'll see a game, I'll play a game, but then I also need to relay the game internally and also sometimes send the copy off to my bosses or like another coworker, and they have to play it from the rule book. And if the rulebook can't do that lift, well, that's problematic because they might play it incorrectly, or they might have a bad experience, or they'll forget something and they'll be like, Danielle, why are you showing this to us? Because, like, we're remote, so I can't always be there in person to teach the game. But also, it's like, I maybe have been playing a ton of games and it's been like 2 months since you taught me in person verbally. And like, yeah, I played it the one time, but I can't retain that many rule books. I work on so many of my own games and companies' games and just play published games. You need to have a good rule book and do not send a prototype without one. Cause I've had a few times where people are like, well, I have a video, use that. I'm like, no, I can't refer to a video. Like, I can't figure out exactly where the setup is, or they'll talk about, oh, there's, yeah, this like two-player optional, whatever. But then it's never explained beyond just mentioning it's a thing in the rule video. And I'm like, no, like, you have to do this. I know it's painful. It's never fun. And there's a lot of great rulebook editors out there too that are willing to like help and do it for cheap.
Yeah, they're not expensive. Like, you're going to pay $75 for some guy to go through your rules. I mean, honestly, like, the best thing I did with Gnome Hollow is I took it to my sister's house, and she'd never played the game, and I handed her the rule book, and I said, I'm just going to watch you. And then they started reading it, and then they asked me a question, and I just looked at them. And my sister just said, are you going to answer the question? And I said, nope. And I just wrote down every single place where they had an issue. I circled it. I literally watched where they broke down in understanding.
That's blind playtesting.
I think, like, the way that you build your rules is so critical for to sell to a publisher. And I think the other thing that is probably the most critical is like building relationship with publishers. If you're just cold calling and cold emailing publishers, you're probably not going to sign any games with them. You need to really just get to know them and go to a convention and then go to the bar that everyone's hanging out at that night and buy them a drink and just talk and stop trying to push your game on them. At the end of the day, like, everybody wants good games, but they also just, they like working with certain people because they get along really well.
Yeah, I always have a hard time because, like, networking, there are digital ways to do it. It is really good when you make a good impression in person. Whether you buy them a drink, I don't necessarily think that needs to happen, but hanging out and just proving that you understand and know their catalog of games, that you've like spent the time to play them or at least like research them, it goes a long way. Like, even if whatever you presented me that time, I'm going to be more likely to be like, yeah, but next time when you bring me something, like, I'll totally look at it. And I know from, like, the other side, when I'm pitching to publishers, like, I know how publishers that'll reach out and be like, do you have anything new to show us? Like, we'd love to meet with you because this big convention's coming up. And that's, like, nice because it means I'm doing one less email if I'm trying to, like, pitch my games. Or I don't even have to do it at a convention. I can do, like, a digital pitch. And then if they like something, we can play it at the next convention.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's so true. I've had people ask me, like, how did you break into this industry? And I said, I got lucky. And it's just true. The best advice I have for people who are trying to get into this industry is, like, line up as many stars as you can, so to speak. And then, like, so that when luck does strike, it can strike you. You know, build a good game. Take people's feedback seriously. If people don't like something, just be flexible. Change it. I think the biggest piece of advice that I've been starting to give people, because they're like, what's the most important thing? And I think that is to stop thinking of it as a game and think of it as a product. The shift from going from I'm making a game to I'm making a product. Look at where the industry is going. And if you're not making games that fit where the industry is going, like if you're building like a 13-hour, $250 box, you're going to not sell that game right now because tariffs make that impossible. So paying attention to what is in demand and what publishers are actually looking for is really important. And then building a product that essentially a publisher can say, okay, this is a home run. We can sell this game. That's not a problem. We would like to work with you. If you are building products that they know that they can move, 100% that it'll sell every time.
I present at conventions about creating products. So I agree with these statements. And so before we close this up, I am curious, did you have any like least favorite moments in working on Twinkle Twinkle, or is it all stars?
Probably being stuck at a table for four straight days without being able to pee. That's a big one. Like,
it's a lesson learned. Bring a friend.
Yeah. If you're going to go to a convention, make sure that you have some sort of a backup, somebody who can let you go or bring you some food or refill your water bottle. Because you talk so much.
you get so dehydrated and there's just like not good airflow. So your lips are so chapped. It's a hot mess at conventions.
Yeah. That's so true. I think that was really the only thing. Like, it was really a positive experience, but I think I built a game that was very much something that I wanted. I'll say this too. People came up to me. So a lot of people in the industry came up, they played, they're like, who do you think this game's for? And I literally told them, I have no idea. I do not know who this game is for. I could not see which publisher wanted it. And a publisher, a fairly prominent publisher, saw it at Gen Con. And they were like, this is super cool. I love this. Would you consider making the tiles cardboard? And I immediately said, no. And they would have sold so many copies. But for me, it was more important that this game have the visual appeal that I really wanted. And I wasn't sure who was going to be willing to eat that price and build the game that I wanted it to be. When Joe saw it and he saw the vision and he goes, no, it has to be acrylic. That's when I was like, yeah, it has to be acrylic.
That's awesome. It's really nice to find a publisher that can be a partner and sees the same vision as you. I know for me, that's more how I'd pick nowadays. It's not always, they're going to sell the most copies. It's more like, oh no, they see the same vision as me. I just know this relationship's going to work better. So I'm going to go for them.
Finding the right publisher is so much more important than trying to force the wrong publisher.
Well then, for my final question, unrelated to all your games, if you could have been the designer of a different game you didn't design, which game would you have wanted it to be?
Hadrian's Wall from Garfield Games. It's like, okay, so I don't like solo games. And I know that sounds crazy. Like, the solo game that's in Twinkle Twinkle, I didn't make it. Joe asked me if I wanted to make it. I said, I don't play solo games. Feel free to have John make it. But I bought this copy of Hadrian's Wall. It's this flip and write. It's very complicated, and there's so much game on these two pages. It's crazy. I've played it like a dozen times. And every time I play it, like, I get about 10 minutes in, and I'm like, I love this game. I love everything about this game. It's so fun. It's essentially a solo game, but you can technically like have a little bit of interaction with other players based on like what card you're flipping over and what card you're selecting. It's just this like thinky little rabbit hole that's so fun to go down. And I just thought to myself, like, what a notch in someone's belt. This game is fantastic. And there's probably a dozen other games that I feel the same way about, but that's the one that comes to mind.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to give it a try. And thank you so much, everyone who's been listening to this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 128, Twinkle Twinkle. And Ammon, always fun chatting. And I know we got a little off subject at some points, but I think we had a lot of good advice in here. For anyone who's trying to follow you on like social media or a website or any of that good stuff, what's the best place to reach you?
You can follow me on Facebook. It's just Ammon Anderson. You can follow me on Instagram. It's levity.games. You can follow me on all the stuff. It's either going to be Ammon Anderson or Levity Games.
Perfect. And I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds. If you're trying to find my personal social media, you can find me on Instagram and Blue Sky under Token Gamer, spelled J-Y-M-E-R. And then also, I now have these fun short form videos where I have a ton of my friends on there for Game Design Unboxed on both TikTok and Instagram, as well as GameDesignUnboxed.com. So for sure, check those out. But this was a great chat, and I look forward to seeing you in person pretty soon.
Yeah, you are the best, and I just totally love you.
Aw, I appreciate you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out NoDirectionPodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out AllPlay at Let'sAllPlay.com. Join us next time.